all circular economy strategies will pay off on resilience and sustainability in the energy sector.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to our IFAD special. IFAD is the world's leading trade fair for environmental technologies. In the first episode of this series, we looked at circular sovereignty. Now we turn to economics. And there's a question that is relevant for many of you working in companies. And this is about the economic potential of circularity. At the same time, this question is also valid on a state level. Therefore, the Federal Association of the German Industries, the BDI, asked its members, companies and associations, and the Boston Consulting Group to come up with an answer to the question, what's the economic potential of circularity? There has been a report on that with many key insights. We will share the link to this report in the show notes, but we will have in this episode now background conversations with the leading authors of that report. That is foremost Klaas Öhlmann, Managing Director of the Circular Economy Initiative of the Federation of German Industries. This is also Alexander Meyer zum Felde, Global Director of Circular Economy at BCG, and Nadine Braun, Head of Circularity and Environment of E.ON. We kick off this conversation with Klaas, providing us with the key results of this report. I have here now Klaas Öhlmann, Managing Director of the Circular Economy Initiative of the DDE. And Klaas, yeah, it's really great to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Klaas, you just released a really impressive report, and I want to learn a bit more about the key findings. So first of all, what's the outcome of the report?
Yeah, I mean, for maybe some first thought on the outcome of the project together with Boston Consulting Group and in partnership with World Business Council on Sustainable Development, we had a look at what is the potential for the growth, market growth of circular solutions within the German industry. So we looked at the value creation of German industries and what's the potential with circular businesses, circular business models. And the main outcome for me is, if we look at the numbers, we could double the value creation from 60 billion to 125 billion euro per year within the sectors we had a look at. So five sectors, which cover about 62% of the industrial value creation in Germany. So from now on until 2045, we can more than double the value creation with circular business models from 60 to 125 billion euros. And that's really a lot if we keep in mind that we have had a look at the industry value creation, which is about 20% of the German GDP. Mm-hmm. So if we look at that, and then we really have great potential overall within our main focus industries in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Klaas, let's have a look at the policy dimension. What I really like about the study is that it's not about we first need to adopt these kind of policies. There is a huge potential. At the same time, I looked at the report, over 170 pages, and I do find one page with a few policy recommendations. Can you elaborate a bit more on so what is needed to really open up this potential?
Yeah, I mean, that's really unique for me from this report. Of course, we always have to have a good discussion about framework conditions, policies, the right policies in place. We are coming out of a really strong phase of regulation within the European Green Deal. We have a lot of policies in place, which are now developed with a lot of different legislations under the main core legislation, like eco-design regulation, batteries, shipments, etc., etc. But what we really had in mind with the study is we have a business potential here and we can really go further doing business, keeping in mind the regulation. Of course, we need it, but the potential is already there. Mm-hmm. So let's go. What we see from my perspective, and maybe to sum it a bit up, is we have two main dimensions. If we look at our European single market, we really see that there is still a lot of fragmentation within our single market. We have 27 member states and a lot of different interpretations. For example, end of waste status, refurbishment, remanufacturing definitions. We have different rules for some waste treatment processes within the landfill legislation. So we see a clear need to harmonize or to go on with the harmonization of our European rules. And we have a strong interest that we can do this within the Circular Economy Act from the European Commission, expected for the third quarter this year. Another dimension, which is for me really important, is what is the position of the European single market in the world, mm-hmm. in the global competition. So, of course, as in Germany, we are export-oriented country. We have a strong interest in doing business, trade, have strong trade relations all over the world. But we have really to have a strategic view how we can protect, on the one hand, our European market. Mm-hmm. So fair competition for everyone who enters the European single market from third countries. About the product conditions, product requirements, environmental regulation, trade regulation, etc. So, and on the other hand, we have to have a really strategic view which materials, products leave our European single market and then why.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have a study that focuses on the potential for the German economy. At the same time, most of the topics you mentioned now are European ones. What of these requirements need to be fulfilled on a European level and mm-hmm. what more on a nation state level?
I mean, we have to take a different views on that, from my opinion. For example, product requirements, rules for transportation within the European single market, waste treatment obligations. From my perspective, these are really clear European competencies, and here they have to be in place comparable European rules in every member state. So that's the first thing for level playing field within the European Union. We need really the same product rules and waste treatment rules and the common understanding of the waste hierarchy in the European member states. That's, for me, is really European competency. And we saw this in the last years when the European Union shifted the regulation schemes from directives with an opportunity to transpose it in the national law with different ways to European regulations. And that's really the way forward from my perspective. Mm-hmm. What we see as a competency for the national level, for example, is the whole discussion of public procurement. So the national German government could play a really strong role in the markets where public procurement plays a big role in construction, for example, or in vehicles for the lower region, services, etc., waste collection, water services. So the public procurement in some markets play a really big role, and there we need national rules which have a really positive impact on circularity. That's mm-hmm. for me clear from national point of view. And another thing is the whole discussion about infrastructure, be it physical infrastructure, mm-hmm. But also the digital infrastructure. There we, to make digital passports happen, etc. There national governments really can play a positive role. If they support such building up this infrastructure, that companies have a really good environment here in Germany to invest, beside topics like energy prices, etc. So national government can really play a big role for the investment conditions for the companies in Germany, but for all the horizontal topics like product requirements, we need European ones. That's from my perspective.
Alex, you just released the joint study with the BDI. You're the global leader in circular economy at BCG and co-author of this study. Klaas already gave us a bit of an overview, but we want to dive into the specific details. First of all, the study is focused on Germany, but we have many international listeners. So how is this applicable to other countries?
First of all, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's great to talk to you. And indeed, we started to assess the GDP potential for Germany. But nonetheless, the assessments and basically the approach as well as the messages hold true for, I would say, most industrialized economies, especially most OECD countries. Obviously, the industry structure might be slightly different. The sectors are different. And it really varies on how dependent you are on external material or imports from materials. Obviously, most economies in the Western world do import materials, have a strong industrial structure, and hence I would say it does apply for most economies.
Okay, great. So keep on listening. It is about circularity, of course, very much from an economic point of view, circular economy. At the same time, circularity does play a role. Yeah. What's the understanding of circularity in the study you applied?
Yeah, I think this is super crucial to understand. In the past, and I'm also a convicted believer of circular economy is the right thing to do. There's many good reasons from an environmental standpoint, from a resource independence standpoint to talk about circularity. But we also need to acknowledge that in the last few years, the whole discussion around GDP growth, positive business cases, cost and access to resources has really driven the circularity agenda. And if we want to make sure that we spread the topic more broadly and get into more acceptance, we should not neglect the fact that in the end, we should scale those elements of circularity that will provide positive GDP, hence also positive employment ratios that are inherent business cases to industry and companies. Yeah? And the study shows that you can get a 5% margin uplift, for example, on some of these business cases. And only if we achieve this, I think the circularity from a carbon footprint reduction perspective, from a more responsible use of materials and whatever comes naturally with it. And this is what the study tries to achieve, right? We're trying to take this away from we just try to save the planet to it's a fully economic, rational topic that combines GDP growth, the business side, but also the environmental aspect. Because if we do get into a business models that create more value with less resources, we do achieve all of the above. And I think this is super crucial. So on your question, how is circularity embedded? We also did very in-depth analyses. How much less resources would we need to require? How much more does Germany become independent from imports? Keep in mind right now on critical raw minerals, Germany is almost 100% dependent on imports. We show in the study that in some segments, like the energy segment, for the energy transition, we can actually decouple that by about 40% of recycling 40% of the required materials within the country. Wow. So we're reducing the dependence from imports. And I think this is super crucial. At the same time, it has the positive environmental footprint. And the study also shows that we are able to reduce the carbon emissions just by these levers that are already GDP growth positive. We would be reducing by a couple of percentage points the countrywide emissions as well. So there is a coherent link in there. Yes.
Okay, nice. You already started to share details. Let's keep on doing that and dive deeper where this economic potential comes from. Mm-hmm. So what are the main industries you looked at?
Yeah. So the study looks very specifically at the industry from an industrial perspective. So we looked at five sectors. The mobility sector, automotive, obviously, mm-hmm. in Germany, it's one of the crucial industries. We look at energy, because it's more and more relevant sector in terms of competitiveness, growth, and so on. We looked at the construction and building materials sector simply because 50% of the materials in Germany used go into construction. We did look at the technical engineering sector, because Germany is leading in recycling technologies, circularity technologies, and so on. And we also looked at textiles, but not from a consumer perspective, more from the industrial perspective. What opportunities do we have once the clothing textiles comes back? So those are the five sectors we're covering.
And who's leading when it comes to the overall contribution to the growth potential?
Well, again, it depends on which metrics you're looking at, right? From a GDP growth, we do see significant potential for the technical engineering and obviously global markets for Germany to be competitive in. From a tonnage and material perspective, obviously the construction material sector is crucial. From an innovation perspective and so on, I think energy also plays a significant reduction. The study also shows that the energy transition in Germany could be 40 billion euros cheaper to the taxpayer if we get the circularity aspect right. Right. So, I mean, there's additional benefits. And so it depends on which you're looking at. And I think it's worth investigating for each of those sectors to go a little bit deeper in what's the benefits of it.
Yeah. Yes. What are the measures companies can take?
Yeah. And that varies obviously by where you sit in the value chain, what's the materials you're handling and so on. But if I go through the sectors, what are the key levers we've been identifying? And crucially to understand, and I think this is where it varies from other circularity papers and documents, we've only looked at those that are positive business cases. Some of the levers where you basically, so car sharing and so on, make sense from a circularity perspective, from an environmental perspective. But if you think about the industry structure in Germany, if we sell 30% less cars, that immediately has an impact on our GDP as well as an unemployment rate. So keep that a little bit in mind if you feel that some circularity levers would be missing. If we go through the segments in mobility, for example, some of the elements are around refurbishment, remanufacturing, repair models. Okay. It's not that we haven't done it in the past, but we could do even more, right? Yeah. There are levers in there around recycling, for example, especially if we now look at the EV batteries and the cars, right? In Germany, even in Europe, we do take them back. We dismantle them. We discharge them. We might even recycle them into black mass, but even that only very little. We have no capacity to process black mass. So at that moment in time, the materials leave mostly to China, to other regions, but we don't have a recycling infrastructure in Germany or Europe. Investing into that to close the loop, to feed the materials back into, be it the mobility automotive sector, into other type of battery applications, is crucial to close the loop. And so these are the levers you see in the mobility segment. We've also detailed case studies. We do have significant rolling stock of great materials, be it trains, for example, right?
True.
Think about it. All the steel and materials in there, even for the trains that are 20, 30 years old, we have not systemically recycled and taking them apart in Germany. Yes, we have fairly high recycling rates, but not necessarily the grades and qualities we need. So there's significant potential in those levers. In the building and construction sector, there are several levers, and some of them have been very intensively discussed. Obviously, there's a part around recycling. I'm very much simplifying now, but if you take concrete aggregates, so from demolition of roads and construction, you feed it back into the clinker production as an aggregate, you're actually saving significant CO2 emissions, which with a carbon price will be increasingly cost to you as a business. But you're also reducing the material input because you're using crushed aggregates, recycled content, and so on. There are levers where we can get much better, right? So levers around recycling. That's also one example where the public can do a little bit more. With the special amount of investments available now made by the government, we will be investing significantly into construction. So why not include in public tenders a minimum recycled aggregate, whatever type of content it is, right? To incentivize and to strengthen the demand side for it. There are also elements when we are building buildings, instead of new builds, in some cases, also in cities and whatever, refurbishment of those apartment buildings requires significantly less resources, mm-hmm. right? So there are potentials laid out in that on the construction materials and building construction side. Next segment would then be, for example, energy. There's a couple of super interesting levers. Refurbishment of transformers, for example, some of the grid components. Mm-hmm. We are extensively building our grid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why not reuse some of those components? We would need to change the incentive structure, but mm-hmm. technically totally feasible. Yeah. Right. What's interesting, if you think about PV recycling or solar panel mm-hmm. recycling, we don't have the capacity in Germany to do it, but we have a significantly high penetration of old solar panels that will come back in 5, 7, 8 years, that contain rare earth minerals and super valuable materials that currently we would not be harvesting, right? And I think those are the levers then in the energy transition sector that make a lot of sense to think through. So again, you had the refurbishment lever, you had the recycling levers mm-hmm. and so on. The equipment manufacturing segment is slightly different. Yeah, it's rather strengthening what we have. So there is a refurb remanufacturing component in there. Take back your old equipment,
yeah.
Reuse some of the materials. It's pure steel. It's the engines of some of those things, especially around magnet recycling. There's a couple of superb examples from the German industry in the report where businesses are doing magnet recycling, right? Mm-hmm. Because the materials per se are still as good as 10, 15, 20 right. years ago. Right now, China is basically buying the world market on magnets, yeah, in order to recycle those materials and components. Again, we lose access to it. Mm-hmm. So let's rethink how we enhance some of these elements around the recycling point. The other part is, and we're both at the IFAD as well, right? So we do see that technology leadership. In some segments, be it plastics recycling, sortation, recycling, and so on, German companies have 30-40% global market share.
Right.
Let's build on that. We do see that the global demand will be about 125 billion annual demand for these equipments. Mm-hmm. India, China, South America, Latin America, all of these countries are also investing into the same infrastructure. So let's make sure we keep our companies competitive. How do we do this? We need to look at energy costs. We need mm-hmm. to look at labor costs and these kind of things, right? So there's levers on that as well. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, textile follows a slightly different route again. You might be wondering why should Germany look at textile recycling, right? And again, not coming from the consumer lens, coming from the industry, it's one of the largest waste streams we're not treating. Mm-hmm. Significant material ends up in incineration or waste to energy, how it's being called in some parts of the world. Nonetheless, countries around us, be it France, be it Turkey, are now taking up that material, are recycling it. Technologies are there, need to be scaled to separate polyester, cotton, and the different type of materials, but they can be reused and basically fiber to fiber recycled, right? So why should that infrastructure be built up in Turkey and not here? It's not even labor intensive anymore. It's really the technologies we need to scale and need to make competitive. And those are examples mm-hmm. That on the different sectors.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. Just to be sure that we get it right, I'm pretty sure you covered it. What about the cannibalization effect? So when you repair, refurb a car, it's on the flip side, one car sold less. So did you factor that in?
Correct. Yes, and you can imagine it's been a super big discussion. And we have completely factored it in the numbers that Klaas mentioned earlier, right? Mm-hmm. So the total potential getting from 60 to 125 billion per year, as well as the cumulative 880 billion GDP growth, they are actually already past cannibalization.
Right.
So it's really additional potential, and we have modeled that through wherever there is a cannibalization effect. We have actually taken that out because the overlying promise of this report is really GDP growth within existing industry landscape mm-hmm. Structure on positive business cases. And in the moment I have a cannibalization effect, that doesn't yield me any benefit, I immediately don't have a business case from an industry perspective, right? And so we have factored that in. What's interesting is still, since, for example, if you think about repair, refurbishment of some of the equipment, right? Imagine you're shipping it to Turkey, to India, to China. If someone else does the servicing, because you're not integrated far down that value chain, you're not offering those services necessarily, you don't even know where it ends up because it's been sold through a third-party provider and so on, you're not cannibalizing any new sales per se. You're actually competing with whoever is repairing this.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. It's not always, I only take an existing product, repair it, and can't sell a new one. It is really on top or add-on to the potential.
Mm-hmm. Alex, the examples you gave, many of them are already possible today. The technology is there. There's market demand. You mentioned it's about positive business cases. Of course, as discussed with Klaas, there are some regulatory changes that would, of course, facilitate this development. But what is holding companies back, or to flip that? So what should we do now?
Yeah. So what's holding it? What's holding companies back? It's A, complexity.
Mm-hmm.
B, awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And C, the lack of trust and feasibility. What do you mean by that? If you've been running a business for 50 years, you've done the same, you have had a linear value chain, it's optimized on that value chain. It functions. It works really, really well. Now thinking about how you completely change your business model requires thinking outside the box, as we call it, right? That's complex. You need to collaborate. You need to think differently about your value chain. And that increases complexity. At the same time, as long as we didn't have supply chain disruptions, as long as we could rely on global markets, global supply, it was a super easy, convenient type of setup. Now you suddenly have supply chain disruptions. You simply don't get access to the material you need to produce.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that mind shift coming into play, and the valuation of materials, access to materials, and reliability or resilience of supply chains becomes more and more crucial. And I think that's one of the turning points. The second is short-termism. Yeah, still many companies are incentivized on a per quarter results. If you really want to transform your business model, if you want to become more circular, it might take time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not talking 10 years, by no means, right? But it does take 1 year, 2 years. You need to adjust your design of your products. You need to think about differently about your service levels and these kind of things. That takes time, and not every company is currently incentivized to think in those time frames. And lastly, collaboration becomes more complex. As long as I could choose from five suppliers and I go for the cheapest or the best quality and reliability and best value for money, I just pick and I get it delivered. Now I suddenly need to talk to my suppliers. I need to talk to my customers. I need to probably talk to parts of my value chain or value circles, as we hopefully have in the future, that I've never been engaged with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a super interesting dynamic, but there's also a lot of opportunity in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alex, thanks for giving all the circularity enthusiasts one more argument, or many more arguments, to drive circularity either in a business or on the state level.
Thank you so much.
Nadine, we just listened to the release of the study about the economic potential of the circular economy. How does the energy sector benefit from it?
So the energy sector, I think, is one of the sectors which is still growing and has really high demand on materials and components in order to achieve the energy transition and the net zero 2040. So I think if you look at this high demand and also the dependency that we have, especially on critical materials, all circular economy strategies will pay off on resilience and sustainability in the energy sector. So therefore, definitely important.
And can you be more specific, or give you an example? What do you need these materials for? What's the equipment you actually need to set up?
So, for example, batteries. I mean, a battery is a big, big topic currently, and there are different critical materials. For example, coltan is one part of the batteries, and is something that you cannot get in Europe. You cannot get it You can get it in Africa, for example, or like in, yeah, very far away. And yeah, so the question is, how can we replace this with recycled material, for example, in future? And another example is in transformers. So we are a DSO, an energy network company.
DSO?
Distribution service operator.
Yeah.
And I think for us, transformers play an important role. They are needed in order to change the frequency from the high voltage to the low voltage, which you then get at your home. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in order to do this, we need transformers. And the transformer, they have a high share of copper. And copper is also, yeah, something you cannot get in Europe. So we are really highly dependent on global supply chains. And so that's a real business case for us, yeah.
Okay. And on the other hand, how can energy companies contribute to the circular economy?
Yeah. Of course, as we are not a manufacturer, we have not the same impact as a manufacturer, for example, from a transformer. But of course, we can already in our procurement criteria talk or work together closely with the suppliers to test different new materials, to test recycled materials in order, are they working in our components? If it then comes to if we own in the component, then it's on us to extend lifetime as much as possible to maintenance, to repair, to refurbishment. We're doing that, for example, in our own workshops. So we can extend the lifetime of a transformer for another 30 years. The average is 30 years.
Oh, wow.
But after we repair and maintenance, yeah, we can double the lifetime of a component. So, and that's
quite an impact.
Definitely.
And are you already at the point that you have circular requirements in your tenders when you actually look for the equipment, be it the batteries, the transformers, that you put some pressure on the manufacturers? Or, I mean, in the end, it's also about increasing demand and circular procurement.
No, definitely. And we are investigating about these possibilities. But I think for the energy sector, we have power lines, yeah? And power has a different physical condition, and we have high safety standards. Mm-hmm. So we have to make a decision from component to component. So we cannot come up with a recycled content share for each, for all our components or materials that we supply. So we have to test it. So what we are doing is we have different partnerships with suppliers, for example, with cables, we are doing this to figure out, okay, what can we do? What can they do? And I think this is the way how we want to approach this. It's kind of innovation, just still ongoing. Yeah.
So coming to my question, how do companies or even consumers benefit from a more circular energy system? Do we pay less for energy at some point? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it would be easy to say just yes, yeah?
Yeah.
But what we can see, and this is also the study that we supported from E.ON that has been launched, where we wanted to calculate or model at least what would be the impact on cost savings into the investments due to refurbishment, lifetime extension, like all these softer circular strategies. And I think we come up with a huge number. It's 45 billion cost savings until 2045 in Germany.
Wow.
Of course, this is a model,
yeah,
and there are a lot of proxies in it, but I think it shows already the potential. And if we can save costs in the end, this will also have a benefit to the customer, of course.
Okay, so this is basically then transformers last longer, batteries last longer.
Exactly. We need less components, new components. A refurbishment is much more cheaper than buying a new component, especially if you look at the global market prices for copper, for example, then there is a business case itself behind it.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nadine, for sharing this perspective.
Thanks.
From a perspective of a company, the study shows many, many opportunities. We discussed a bit the regulatory requirements. What now? Do I wait for the regulators to create that unified market, or what's the next step?
Yeah, that's really a good point. We tried in the study to demonstrate what companies can do without waiting years or 4 years for the right regulation in place. So we demonstrated that RR strategies already exist, mm-hmm. which are competitive within our economy to create new businesses. Mm-hmm. And these R strategies, they differ from sector to sector. For example, we have all the machinery sector, the German export wonder machineries. There we see a clear opportunity in the R strategies, refurbishment and remanufacturing. Mm-hmm. There's 5% more, a better positive margin than with in comparison with the new machineries. Mm-hmm. So a clear positive opportunity for remanufacturing and refurbishment. Mm-hmm. And there, from my point of view, this study can help to make this visible to companies, to really bring refurb and reman to the heart of company strategies. And these opportunities are there. For some of them, we need some more of better regulation, for some not. But we hope that we can, with this results of the study, motivate companies, because we have a really more or less conservative study, which is really adaptable to business models in place with positive impacts. And we hope that we can motivate companies, leaders to see, okay, there's a potential, and it really has to do with resilience. Mm-hmm. And of course, resilience, from my point of view, is no free lunch. Yeah, there's a price to pay for better resilience strategies, mm-hmm. Which in mid and long term will really pay off. Mm-hmm. Maybe not tomorrow, not in 2026, but resilience has a price and a lot of positive potential, positive effects for our economies. And we hope we can really be a part of a really open and business-driven discussion with this study.
Yeah, Klaus, wonderful. I mean, thanks for showing the way to a more resilient, competitive, and prosperous economy and society. Thanks, Klaus.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
This was the second episode in our IFAD special. We will add the links to the report, both the comprehensive German version and the English summary, to the show notes. The next episode will be about startups. So we stick to the topic of economics. And I think our final motto is even more relevant for this episode than anywhere else. It's thrive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.